Yes, you are now listening to the sound of Sports Reports as Ordered. And those sounds do include a funeral procession for the NBA All-Star Game. All-Star Weekend, Mr. Logical's done with it. Mr. Logical, I said, one and only world-renowned. Born in Texas, raised in VA, representing everything New Jeru.
You
know that one of the greatest franchises in the world, Friday the 13th, Camp Crystal Lake happened in New Jersey, even though the movie said Illinois. Hardwick, Blairstown, Hope, stand up. Don't bring feelings to a fat fight.
Don't do it.
And then, of course, it is I, your unorthodox statistician that believes in Joe Hendry. Going left so much that you thought I was southpaw. Going left so much that DeAndre Wilder still don't know what happened. I am 2-5. So tonight we're going to talk All-Star Game. We're going to talk college football playoff expansion. We're going to talk NFL draft eligibility rules. Let's get it. Like, review, subscribe, share, rate. Do all the free things. Do all the good things. So, Mr. Logical.
Listening.
They tried it.
They tried.
They tried, and I'm still not sold. So, how did you feel about NBA All-Star Weekend?
I was under the impression that it was going to be a three-on-three style. I thought that was one of the conversations. So I remember, like, for some reason, that was locked into my brain. It was a little bit more competitive. Guys weren't really like hustling back on defense. They were defending the jump shots a little bit more. They weren't just letting guys walk the ball up and shoot half court shots. I think guys were literally trying to make it to 40. I didn't really like the logistics of the format. I thought that could be done a little better because 40 just was a strange number. You know, because I know even the big three goes to 50. You know, maybe they didn't want to, you know, drum off that too much, but I figure you go to 50 and you make it a little bit more competitive. Maybe you go 5 minutes, you know, 2 5-minute halves or whatever, just something to kind of like keep the intensity going, because what they were doing in between the games, albeit was entertaining.
Was it?
But like watching Dame Lillard like miss three-pointer after three-pointer deliberately. So this guy actually got a shot at winning the $100,000. It would have been good if you
was it entertaining.
I think it was entertaining.
The only thing I was entertained by was In Vogue, because I saw way too much Kevin Hart.
Yeah, I like Kevin Hart, and I think it's a move. It's a move, and I think it's supposed, like you said, we talked earlier, it's supposed to be for the fans. I just feel like the reason it felt like too much Kevin Hart is because you knew as a fan watching the game, you weren't going to get that much more basketball. And the NBA knew it too. So that's why they were just funneling Kevin Hart and his jokes. And then the whole TNT staff, the Gone Fishing, and they were zooming in on some of the players that I'm pretty sure have had an unfavorable word or back and forth with some of these guys before. But they knew they had to do that because you weren't going to get that much more intensity out of the players. So you had to like have the 3-point contest. You needed In Vogue and Too Short and E-40 and all the Bay Legends, which was dope. Raphael Saadiq,
you know,
I thought it was dope. I thought it was a dope look. But like I said, the reason it wasn't,
basketball is dope.
You knew you weren't going to get great basketball. You knew off the rip you weren't going to get great basketball. It's like you go to a birthday party, right? You take your daughter to a birthday party, and it's at Chuck E. Cheese. You know the pizza's going to be eh. The games will be somewhat entertaining because you know what you're going to get because it's Chuck E. Cheese. So you plan accordingly mentally. I think people kind of tuned in thinking it's a new format. It was going to be different. Like, listen, the problem with the All-Star game is guys don't play tough defense. But you don't want to be the guy who gets yourself hurt in an All-Star game especially because most of these all-stars are probably getting paid on average $40 million. If we had to, we have to guess it, because it's probably some $60 million guys. It's probably some $30 million guys in there. So, you know, you factor a couple of $50 million. So it's like these owners are shelling out $40 million a year for a lot of these guys running up and down the basketball court for their team. The last thing they want is a fucking highly competitive exhibition game where someone gets a finger nicked and he's out 2 weeks. You know, just as little stuff like to that.
What you brought up earlier when we were on the phone?
When back in the day, when they were barely paying these guys any money, they're like,
No. The part where, you know, they go to LA Fitness in the offseason.
Oh, yeah.
Super ultra competitive games with no fans available. I mean, present.
Yeah. So, and that's what, so even then, but I think even then, a lot of contracts are probably written so those guys don't play many of those games. That's probably why they do.
But the last couple of years, these guys have been going to the Drew League. You know, DeMar DeRozan, I know, went out there about to get into fights with people and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, I don't know.
In those courts, and a lot of those courts are like NBA approved, and they have to meet certain specifications. I mean, Chet Holmgren broke his foot and missed his whole rookie year because of an exhibition game. But those Drew League games, those games, they go a little bit more, it's a little bit more competitive. The last thing you want is your star player rolling an ankle. Because somebody's closing out hard on this 27-foot three-point attempt.
So this is my problem. Yes, and because everything you said is valid. But what I'll add to it is, just going back through our timeline here of being alive and everything, how many injuries do you recall happening in an All-Star game?
I think D-Wade broke Kobe's nose.
He did.
Or the other way. Or yeah. And then he waited till Miami came to LA and he put like 50 on him.
Yeah. Crazy. But I'm just saying, like, there have, to my knowledge, from my memory, there haven't been ACLs or Achilles or any of those type of things that have happened in all. Not saying that they can't, but I'm just saying, when you're looking at probability, like, what are the chances of that happening? Right. So
I think the 2020 All-Star game when Kobe and Gigi passed, I think that was intense. There was even a couple like hard fouls in there. That was a pretty intense game. But I think that was kind of relishing in this post-Kobe. This is how Kobe would have wanted it. But if you play the owner's perspective, I'll play the player's perspective in this moment. The players are all being graded on postseason performance, regardless of how well they do in a regular season, even though being an all-star is your regular season performance.
Right.
Every single one of these guys, these top 45, 50, $55 million guys, LeBron, Stephs, KDs, all these guys, they're being judged on playoff performance and championships. The NBA All-Star game is probably such a spectacle. I think a lot of the players don't want to do. The NBA wants to treat it like a Super Bowl week, and it's media week, right, and the players are there all the time. The players are like, listen, man, I got to go back to work on Wednesday for my actual team. So you want me to fly from Tyler Hero plays in Miami. So I got to fly from Miami to Oakland, do this stuff for 4 or 5 days, and then get back to my team.
Yep.
And then go. So it's like, okay, cool.
Yep, that's your job as a professional. I'm sorry that you have to be inconvenienced for a weekend. I'm so sorry.
And
you get days off after the All-Star game. So it's not as if they're playing tonight.
They're playing Wednesday.
I know. That's 3 days after the game. You know what I'm saying? How much rest you need? You know what I'm saying? But this is the thing. The All-Star game is supposed to be, to some degree, an appreciation to the fans. Now, this is the part where you lose me. Like I agree with you, but at the same time, there's another piece of it. Whereas these last couple of years, we've been talking about load management. We've been talking about players not being available when people pay good money to go to these games, and there's a LeBron not playing, a KD, whoever it might be, right? So when you look at it that way, I'm looking at it as this is for the fans, the people that make sure that you get this money in your pocket. You know, saying the money that you're earning comes from us. You know,
see, so and I know, hold on. I think the money comes from the TV networks.
Well, definitely.
And the players don't give a shit about the TV networks.
People still out here buying beer. Because that's who's paying them. People still out here buying beer, popcorn.
The owner's getting a good cut, but the only, I think the only, I think the money comes. I think the money, for instance, I went to a Yankees game in 2014 when I first got here. I think the beer was like $12 or $14 in. I think it's still probably the same price now. So right. When the players are going back to these CBA meetings, they are lobbying for this TV money. So the players, it's not like the players are looking at the fans like, listen, we respect the fans, but the money is from the TV execs.
Okay, fair
the
enough.
The fan experience used to be the way that it went. Until the money got crazy, until the owners started getting these big ass TV deals, and the players were like, cool, I want my cut of this TV money. The TV money is probably astronomical compared to
Definitely. That's why 41 home game money. You got these $60 million contracts and all that kind of stuff.
So like, yeah, so your 41 the owners, home games and the All-Star game still, for the owners, they're probably looking like, that's chump change compared to this.
It might
chunk
be, but
I'm
it's still
from
money.
This billion
it's still,
dollar.
It's still money. You know what I mean? Yeah. That you're getting and splitting. The owners are splitting with the players. You know. So from that standpoint, I'm looking at this as it's one weekend out of a year, out of a season that we just ask you to show up, and nobody's telling you to act like it's game 7 of the NBA finals or anything like that. We know even when Jordan and them was playing, the first quarter and a half was freestyle, get your alley-oop off, get your behind the back and your no looks off or whatever. But when it was fourth quarter, just play to win the game. That's all we asking you to do. We're not saying go out there and play with playoff intensity. Just want or act like you want to win the game. So from that standpoint, bringing it back a little bit, there's been a conversation from people like Jason Tatum, Draymond Green, and they've been saying things like, well, while we got the rising stars out here, like playing on Sunday is a privilege. Like this, you got to earn this and all this kind of stuff like that. I don't have a problem with the thought per se, but for us, the conversations that we've been having about how the NBA needs to highlight more of these players, that's exactly what the rising stars are there for. And when you really look at it, the best, for me, at least in my opinion, the best game of the night was the game that the Rising Stars was a part of. That was the game where I felt that effort was at its highest point. You know, those younger guys was trying to make a name for themselves against the OGs, if you will.
And I think Barkley had a conversation with Draymond. He was like, the reason the Rising Stars are out here is because y'all made the game so boring. I think the one that I noticed where I knew, like, this was it. It was 2023 when I flew back to Utah. So I wanted to go snowboarding, and it was the All-Star game. I was like, you know what? I need a break. There's a year after my retirement, so every once in a while, you know, I'll take a few days, go back to kick it with my friends in Utah. So I went there, and Saturday night, like during the three-point contest and the dunk contest, that Saturday night, me and my boy went to a bar. Downtown Salt Lake, he pulled right up to the bar and parked. It wasn't like packed. It wasn't any extra stuff going on. It was like they had one of the hotels had like a Nike ad running on it. Ja Morant had his shoe was coming out, and it had like Swarovski crystals or something on it. So it had like an igloo where you can buy your shoes and it slides out the igloo, like a vending machine kind of thing or whatever. So that was downtown. But as far as like what I imagine a downtown atmosphere would look like with the NBA All-Star game there, it didn't match. Literally, we drove around, went through, I think it was like maybe one barricade that said, you know, turn left here. And we went up a block, kept going south on another block, went west on another block, turned right, you know, right there by the bar. Like there was no foot traffic. There was nothing going on like outside of the stadium that says, hey, there's an NBA All-Star game going on here. So then the next day I went snowboarding and I was tired and I was like, man, it would be kind of cool to try to go get tickets, like just to go to Will Call and see if they had tickets or whatever. But also tired from snowboarding, I'm like, I just watched on TV and I was watching. I'm like, that was probably the most boring game ever. And I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Because like I said, maybe the nightlife just didn't like intrigue the players enough. Maybe like, because if you're looking to party, Salt Lake City is not the place to go. You're looking to do some great daytime camping, hiking, you know, sledding, snowboarding, skiing, all stuff in February. It's a great time for it. It's not a great place to go.
Church or something.
Yeah, you want to hear the word. You know what I mean, that's a great place to be. But I think the players were like, "Yo, this is whack," and I think that led to that this butting heads. And the players were like, "Yeah, we have all the leverage here when it comes to this game. Right, you can't get rid of it because it's a money grab."
I'm gonna ask you a question, and I'm not trying to do what you think I'm doing. So let me preface it. I'm not trying to do what you think I'm trying to do.
Do what you got to do, player.
All right. So when we talk about things like the slam dunk contest, you already know where this is going. Slam dunk contest, all-star game. Do you look at somebody like a LeBron James who has been the face of the league for the last, at least, I'm going to just call it 15 years. It's probably been longer than that. But 15 years in how he has not participated in things like the slam dunk contest, even though we've seen people, the Jordans, the Dominiques, even your Kobe's, Vince Carter, whoever, like stars, you know, do you think that sent a ripple through the rest of the league of, oh, we don't have to do this shit?
I'm going to say partially. And the reason I'll go with that is because we talked about Kobe got his nose broken by D-Wade in the All-Star game. Kobe, his tenacity seemed to resonate with the players. Mm-hmm. I think LeBron brings in a sense of taking care of yourself so you can put your team in the best position that you need to be in, to include your personal entourage and your basketball team. I think players are picking up on that from him.
Okay.
As far as a dunk contest, I don't know why he never did it.
Oh, I know why he never did it.
I honestly don't know why. Because he just didn't want to be compared to Jordan in the dunk contest, or he didn't want to lose.
But I'm not saying that I think he would have lost. I'm not saying that I think he would have lost. But that just would have been at a certain point that would have become.
But in 2004, 2005, 2006.
No, he should have did it. That's when he should have done it.
In all of those years. So, like, I don't think losing was on his mind in those years. I don't think legacy was on his mind.
His team was still going
30 or 40 wins.
I don't know how good of a dunker he is. I know he's a powerful dunker.
I've seen, like, some highlights of him throwing the ball off the wall and doing so. So, like, I can – and he did the dunk contest.
Speaking of the dunk contest, my guy got robbed the other night, by the way. You know what I mean? But we'll get into that later. But the reason that I asked that question is kind of tied into Charles Barkley and Draymond's conversation of y'all made the league boring. Because if it's one thing I know about Americans are brand whores. Like we could have watched the same slam dunk contest that we saw the other night with Matt McClung and Steph Castle doing what they were doing. And if those names were Ja Morant and Anthony Edwards, they could have did the same exact dunks that those two dudes did. And people would have talked about it like it was one of the best slam dunk contests we've seen in years. Not ever, but just in years. You know what I mean? And that's where the league is in a bad place. That's where the league is in a bad place. Because remember when the Suns and the Bucks made the finals, a lot of people didn't watch. Even though you had Giannis, Chris Paul, like all these recognizable people, there were still people like LeBron.
Guys going for their first championship. Yeah. But we talked about that the way they talked about the Rising Stars players. The NBA, I don't know. I'm trying to say, I want to come off as like, because I've been thinking about it all day. Like, how would they fix it or what the issues are? Ultimately, it just comes down to, I don't think the players feel that they get the respect they feel that they earn from the media, especially now that a lot of the most popular media voices are former players. Mm-hmm. I think players are treating every event or every trade or every situation like it's us the 400 players versus everybody else.
They are with sensitivity.
And I think that's being led by guys like LeBron and Steph and KD. Because let's keep it a buck. If we I know Facebook comments aren't everything, but if you look at a lot of the commentary surrounding, you know, LeBron, like LeBron not playing yesterday. It's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yeah, he could have said it earlier, whatever the case may be. Like, it's not
that's his problem. Job. That's the problem. Speaking of Facebook comments, thank you, Alohimani.
Yeah, appreciate that. But that's what I'm saying. It is not the individual player's job to make sure your product is great.
It's not,
NBA
but don't.
NBA is not doing a good job of maintaining their own product.
You're 100% right. But when you're the face of the league and the only dude that
so if I'm the face, if that's the case, NBA, you just that's the case. Listen, you can't tell me, or you can't blame everything on me, even stuff that isn't involving me.
Absolutely.
And then when I want to get involved, it's like, oh no, we'll take it from here. It's like, listen, if you want to use my name, image, and likeness to push the stuff forward, then you need to acquiesce to some of our requests, because you have to recognize no one goes to NBA games to see Adam Silver. No one goes to see the refs. These are real problems that the players are having. And I think the players are feeling like
the players are pumped. Let's say it.
They gotta know. That's what we always do that. We do
that. No, because it's true. No, let me tell you. No. Nobody is telling LeBron James. Nobody's telling LeBron James to go out there on your 40-year-old busted wheel and jump out the stadium. Nobody's saying that. We just saying, can you give us a fucking day's notice or whatever? Just so we can have a
report. I don't know the particulars of that conversation.
Like, if you're the face of the league, act like you're the face of the league. If you're the guy that gets all the credit,
I think we're leaning towards a lockout or a strike. I don't think the relationship
basketball can go away.
Like, what? That's what I'm saying. I don't think we're in a position between the league and the associated people who are the league, like the media, the owners, all that. And the players, I think they're at an impasse. And I think I don't know when their CBA expires, but I guarantee you either the owners are going to lock some guys out or the players are going to go on strike. We talked because they keep talking about don't complain about the refs. You and I have watched these games and we're like, listen, the refs at every level are the most sensitive people on earth. And people talk about the players. My son's JV team, the refs gave out 5 technicals. In a JV basketball game, 5. Now, the NBA, they're acting just like them. It's like you guys are behaving like JV basketball referees. And it's impacting the game. It's impacting the way the players are doing. And the NBA is like, listen, you don't complain about what we put out there. So the players are like, all right, cool.
You know,
then when you put my face on this marquee, if I don't feel like playing that day, I'm not going to play.
Well, it's just like that thing, right? There's people that you've met throughout your life where they don't really talk much. And then when they do talk, everybody pays attention, or it's like, whoa, because you don't hear that person talk much. For the fact that it was Steph that made the comments about the refs should tell you something. And it'd be different if this was Dylan Brooks, Draymond even, or whoever that were making these comments. It was Steph Curry. So for Adam Silver to kind of poo-poo what Steph was saying.
See, just Adam goes to Silver show you. He is the player's commissioner.
Right.
And
right.
I think the owners are leaning in him. Like, listen, David Stern wouldn't have let X, Y, and Z fly. I'm like, yo, dog, you're not David Stern. You are the substitute teacher and the captain of all the sports teams are in your science class and they're running the show. So you got to take the message back to the break room with the teacher saying, hey, we want 55-minute lunches versus 45 minutes. You are our lackey, because without us, you guys don't have a good enough product.
Right. So before we get into ideas and solutions, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Oscar Robertson and Draymond.
Yeah, I think Oscar was dead on. I think he was dead on correct, because I've been talking to people recently, and I just felt like I've had like, I'm about to be 44 this year. And what I'm starting to notice is that I'll hear something that someone says that's younger, or I'll think about something that I've heard when I was younger that resonates now more than it did when I heard it when I was 26 or 27 or whatever the case may be.
Right.
And I think some of these players, it's like, Draymond, you're bored because you don't bring anything else really to the Golden State Warriors. You don't get a lot of shots. You don't get an opportunity to create a lot of highlights. The structure in the offense you play was like, you're just giving the ball to Steph. And the reason Steph is probably complaining about the rest, because Steph is like, listen, I'm the star here. And I'm getting hit all the time. And Draymond can't take any stress off him because he doesn't shoot the ball. Even if he doesn't shoot a good percentage, he doesn't shoot it that often.
He's better from three this year, but I get the point.
But like, yeah, it'll be so many times where like he'll have the ball and he'll just be looking to you know, get that little quick pass off to Steph and set the screen. And then he ends up getting like some BS foul call. Now he's irate and he gets a technical, and they're like, it just kind of messes up the whole feng shui of the game. But what Oscar Robertson is saying is like, listen, the game isn't boring. The game is what it is. You guys are playing it the way that it is. And like I said, I think it's just because I don't think it's a lot of cohesion. I don't think coaches and players are on the line. I think these new owners coming in, firing coaches and getting rid of, I just don't think that the NBA as a whole looks at their league as this thing they have to cultivate. I think everyone's looking out for themselves. The players, the owners, the people who are in positions, the people who can be voted out of positions. I think everyone's kind of looking like, gimme, 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 gimme. And that's not sustainable.
Right.
That's going to falter. Okay. But I think what Oscar Roberts is saying is like, yeah, it's boring because you don't do much. you aren't that much of a participant in the
right,
game.
Right. Now, so I heard a couple of players say some things. So I'm going to just give you some things that I heard. And then I want us to kind of think about, one, if what they're saying are good ideas. If not, like, how can the All-Star Weekend be a little bit better just from our perspective? So one of the things I heard was Damian Lillard mentioned that he wants to go back to the East-West format, and he wants to take that page out of the old baseball book where the winner gets home court advantage, you know, through the finals. So I know you're against that. I'm against that for the most part.
I wasn't a big fan of it, just because, I mean, I think in baseball, you had teams. Yeah, you had teams that won, like, you know, 112 games. Mm-hmm. And they're on the road to a team that won 88.
Right. So then Jaylen Brown mentioned that maybe the game, like you brought it up earlier, the big three thing, where the game maybe should go to 50 instead of 40. And then I mentioned Jason Tatum. Dame Lillard agreed with him as far as why are these rising stars here. But what Dame offered was, which I don't like just because I don't necessarily know how you go about it, but he wants to do, instead of the rising stars, let's do the all-star snub team. And I don't know how I feel about that, because it's a good idea in theory, because those guys would come out on a chip with a chip on their shoulder and try to play against the guys that were selected over them. One, I don't know if you could field enough team, because one, I don't know if there's that many snubs to build out a team.
You get about six total, right? You know, realistically.
And maybe not even that. You know what I mean? Like, because this year I know there was Norman Powell, there's Sabonis, but
I think LaMelo Ball.
LaMelo Ball, but he's on a like 10-win team or something. So
yeah, but I mean, his numbers are all-star caliber numbers. So if you just simply look at, like, all right, the snubs are the guys who are on the teams.
Yeah. The NBA don't want that. But are there any ideas that you have that could make the All-Star Weekend better in your eyes?
I like East versus West.
Residente.
So you have 15 teams per.
Uh-huh.
I believe baseball, every team has to be represented. I don't know if NBA has
the same rule. No, they don't, but I don't like that rule.
That's kind of tough. So you go.
Rising Stars 12, was the best part of the night for me.
12 guys, East versus West, no drafts, no picks. And you play, I don't know, 4 10-minute quarters.
Give Adam Silver a trial run because he brought that up a couple weeks ago.
4 10-minute quarters. So you just simply sit down and say, you know what, we're going back to East versus West. We need you guys to hustle back on defense. That's it. I mean, look, that's the only problem with the game is that no one hustles back on defense. I don't think the likelihood of you jogging
that game winner, that game winning play was just absolutely awful. The Jason Tatum dunk.
Yeah.
And Shagun didn't get, that was just awful. Like, I think Wimby snapped on him too, but that was just awful. But yeah, I don't know.
Looked like they were just like, let's get this over with. Like I said, the one I watched in Salt Lake City was like, they didn't care. Like, they had the whole, like, oh, once it gets to this point and then these points match up. And I'm like, just.
Yeah, I know you don't like.
Wait 40 minutes.
I know you don't like the Elam ending, but I love the Elam ending, you know, because I think that's where the competitive nature comes from. And you still get, I guess, a regular allotted time of basketball, because like last night there was roughly a little bit over 30 minutes of total basketball played. And one thing that I really didn't like was how long the breaks were in between the games.
I thought they were going to be shorter, and I was watching, like,
I think one was like 17 minutes or something like
this
that.
this is long, and it was like, it was long to the point where I thought there was no more basketball left.
Well, that's where I thought people were going to get injured. You know what I mean? Like, you got them
sitting,
like,
there getting cold.
Yeah, like, that's where I thought the injuries could happen. You know, but I think the slam dunk contest, you know, might just have to be one of those things where you incentivize the players, like, where it has to be something that will make them come out. You know, the All-Star game was nothing but a concert that featured some dribbling. You know what I mean? So, like, I think – so one thing I was thinking about, now that I'm thinking about it now, I don't like it as much. But one of the things that I had thought originally was, why not just play like a 12-minute quarter? Instead of going to 40 or whatever, just play a 12-minute quarter. Because that incorporates something that you brought up earlier, like having a time. Because that, I think the time brings an urgency. You know, like, if you're just going to 40, you could go down 37 to 33 and you're like, ah, whatever. Like, you know, like, and then when they get 39, all of a sudden now you want to play hard. You know what I mean? So I think if you put some time, if you add time to it, you create a certain urgency. And you know, I hated to break the shout out to TNT team too. You could have did that on All-Star Saturday. You could have did that on Saturday night. You know, like, you know, especially after Wimby and them got disqualified. You know, but East West.
Yeah, that was silly too. And it just.
But that just shows you that the players don't respect it.
Because I don't think they do. Flat out, I don't know how
to get them to respect it.
I think you probably gotta meet him at the table.
I think that
be real. I think a lot of these, like, I think the billionaire owners and the billions of access that they have, I think they treat the players like afterthoughts. And it's like, yo, we're helping you generate this billion. Your net worth is ramping up because of us. And I think that the players, because it's always like threats to the players. Oh, they better not do this. They better do this. Or we're going to have to do this. And we're going to have to. And the player's like, yeah, whatever. What can you do without my face on this marquee?
I think it has to be something.
That building in Sacramento is empty if we don't have the Sacramento Kings playing basketball on the inside of it. Like, it's that simple.
I think that it has to be something intrinsic. Like, somebody like a Jason Tatum, who is on the defending champion, who looks up to Kobe and sends text messages to Kobe still. You know, like, somebody like that has to set a tone. Like, we coming out to win tonight. You know, I don't know if that works, like the rah-rah, but somebody has to attempt that. Because, like you said, I think people respected Kobe from the standpoint of, even though this is an All-Star game, Kobe ain't going to let us slide.
Yeah, Kobe not going to let you slide.
Yeah.
Like, especially out there trying to wear Kobe's.
I'm not signing.
Like, you can't wear Kobe's on the court with him and then be out here slacking.
And I'm not trying to make the case that every All-Star game before now was this big defensive stout game, because it wasn't. Like I said,
we just had icons, and I think 90s, early 2000s, those players were icons. Like you had the guys from the 80s that were still like still young enough to be kind of part of the like the festivities. Like, you know, because if you think about players that got drafted in 1980, 81, 82, 84 in that range, you know, they were probably only like they were 20 or so when they got drafted in 80, 80 in that range. They were like 36 or 40 years old, like even if they were retired in 2000. Mm-hmm. But they were still like Magic Johnson's there, Larry Bird's there, you know, Kevin, like, so all like the legends of the game are still hanging around. And then you got this new wave of guys that came through in the 90s. I think those guys were just more iconic than the guys we have now.
And I think those guys were more ambassador.
And they respect, and I think they respected the groundwork that these players laid for
them. Yeah, I think they were more ambassador minded. Whereas like these guys like Shaq, they just look at it as you're going to make them forget me or you're replacing me. So I don't want to see you do well. Like I'm here because I get paid, but I'm not advocating for you to be the next great star.
It's kind of how sometimes when I look around, like I said, I still work in the Air Force Base and I, you know, I joined in 2000, you know, so the stuff that I see, like when I'm walking around the base and the, when I see the new rules and I see the new PT changes and stuff like that, it's like, why y'all doing all this?
Girls are mad about that nail polish though. I tell you that.
They were doing a nail polish thing. It was like guys with blonde hair. It's like, what is going on? But
yeah,
it just, to me, it was different. So I think Shaq is like, yeah, when I was coming up, I paid homage to these guys by playing hard in the All-Star game, playing hard against them. You guys are just, I think the new players are just so, everyone's so brand management focused that it's hard to get them to buy into this or conceptualize like this league as like a family, because you see how negotiations go, you see how trades go, you see how clandestine a lot of these moves that these owners and these GMs are making. It's like, and then you go to social media. It's only so much you can ignore. And everybody's bashing them. Like LeBron James right now, if he turned on his Twitter or whatever social media app or TV, it's like he's getting, you know, you could be upset that he didn't play. Cool. But he's like, it's an exhibition game that none of you tuned into anyway. So you guys didn't watch it, well, but you're mad at me for not playing. Doug
Gottlieb earlier, you know.
Yeah, because Doug Gottlieb is one of those guys that kept running his mouth about how all these players are terrible, blah, 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 blah. And then he can't get a win coaching a college basketball team.
Hey, they won yesterday, by the way. but no,
before 3-24. But like, I think that's part of it. But to I think the league used to be ambassadors. Now these guys are brand management.
Yeah, it's just a change of the times. But to Rez's point, I think I might want to take the opposite thought on that, because like somebody like Jason Tatum, you know the legendary dunk that he had on LeBron and all that, where's the tapes and all that kind of stuff like that. So with the social media, like you have an opportunity to see these guys at a younger age than we saw some of those older players, so you can follow them for longer. But that's just a thought. But I did get upset when I saw Ja Morant, Giannis, and Zach LaVine jerking each other off about the joining the dunk contest next year. LeBron did that
same thing like 12 years ago. He did the same thing on the sideline.
And it also was one of those things like it took for Ja to say something. It took for Ja to joke around if he was.
Ja should have said, I'm going to do the dunk contest. You try to dunk on everybody every game, and you've been in the league all these years. You've never done a dunk contest.
And that's what he said. He was like, I'm thinking about – McClung got me thinking about this or whatever he said. And then Giannis is like, I'll do it if you do it. And then LaVine's like, Giannis, I might have to make a comeback.
7 foot,
all of y'all put y'all asses down because y'all had years and opportunities to join this dunk contest. Don't try to act like you're
should be between 6'2 and 6'5. Anyone bigger than that, it doesn't look
as cool. That's a good point, Rez. That's a good point. But that's enough of that shit. I'm tired of talking about mediocrity. My guy, Steph Castle, got robbed in the slam dunk contest because a dude jumped over a fucking car, you know, and just, I'm just.
Let's think about that. A man jumped over a car and dunked the basketball. That's not like a thing that just you could just roll up to any park and see happen. Like, that's a pretty dope
thing. I don't care about
that. I think we're just I think we just, as fans, we've seen everything.
No, I just think everything's digital. Steph Castle had the better dunks. I just think Steph Castle had the better dunks, and Matt McClung was just prop guy. But actually, real quick, before we move on, one last question. I know a lot of the WNBA players just did this unrivaled one-on-one tournament. Do you think something like that could be good for All-Star Weekend for the NBA players? Because just me personally, I don't want to see a one-on-one contest, but
a lot of people
that I talk to seem to be into it.
I don't want to see a one-on-one because I don't think those guys are going to take it too serious. Because you don't. Can you imagine? Like, let's keep it on.
Though they don't want to get crossed up.
Can you imagine Ja or Anthony Edwards crossing LeBron up and hitting him with the Byron Russell and pushing him down and shooting a jumper? I'm not gonna front. I wouldn't put myself in that position.
Okay.
Or like somebody hitting you with a hezzy and you jumping. And like, that's the picture. Like, nah.
Well played, sir. Well played. You know, but moving on from the mediocrity, let's talk about money. So apparently, college football is this close
to being the greediest organization on earth. Yeah.
Well, they're already that.
God damn, it's awful. It's appalling.
Right.
So, gobsmacked. I mean, I can't even think of another adjective to describe how I feel. It's ridiculous, but keep going. My bad.
So we are a few weeks away potentially from finding out that the playoff is going to expand to either 14 or 16. Along with that change comes the Big Ten and SEC both getting 4 auto bids, the ACC and Big 12 both getting 2 auto bids, and then your G5 spot. And then the rest being at large spots. So just for the purpose of this conversation, I wanted to play around with an idea, Mr. Logical, because, you know, a couple of weeks ago we talked about how the ACC was potentially talking about having a little mini tournament for their conference title, you know, 1 versus 4 versus 3. Yeah. So I wanted to look at this year's standings and just kind of play with that a little bit, pause, if you will, because, you know, like the SEC and the Big Ten getting these auto spots. But if you're getting the auto spots, what if you have a year like this year in the SEC? And what I mean by a year like this year, where everybody was just kind of jumbled up together. So let's look at this real quick.
Screen. So, new features.
You know what I'm saying? So as we're looking at this real quick, let me get all these teams in here. Oh, I'm on the wrong one. Let me get all these teams in here. So we can look at these standings together. And I hate when it does that because I said SEC. All right, so as we look at this list, obviously Georgia beat Texas in the SEC championship game. They both got into the playoffs along with Tennessee. But then we had the controversy, right? Bama, Ole Miss, you know, South Carolina, these teams deserve to be in. So let's just say hypothetically, you could do this one or two ways. You could do the ACC thing where in this scenario on my screen here, you would have Texas playing Missouri and Georgia playing Tennessee, you know, to get into the playoffs. But if you look at these standings, you got Missouri 5-3, Ole Miss 5-3, Bama, LSU, South Carolina, A&M. And then it's all jumbled, right? Because Missouri lost to Alabama. You know, Ole Miss and Bama both beat South Carolina, but Ole Miss lost to LSU. Bama beat LSU. Texas A&M beat LSU, lost to South Carolina. You know, didn't play Ole Miss and all these. They beat Missouri, though. So I don't know how you even do that. But, like, so let's just say, hypothetically, for shits and giggles, right? You got 4 automatic slots. So looking at this, maybe I give Texas and Georgia 2 of the bids. Y'all won division title. We don't need to have no SEC – or not division title, but we don't need to have an SEC title game.
So I think we got to subtract a couple of – losses, because if you're going into the season, you would have 9-3. So you had 9-3 Bama,
right? Right now you include the bowl games. Yeah, this includes the bowl games. Yeah.
Okay. Hypothetically, we'll just say this is how the season ended, right?
Yeah. So maybe you give Texas and Georgia the spots because they were the top two.
So the problem that you got to run into is that Missouri with the 10 wins. There still will be a conversation of how do we get Bama and Ole Miss in.
That's where the that's
the problem with the entire thing.
That's the problem with the
system. It has nothing to do with the wins and losses. The system's already stacked for them. Pull it back up real quick. I'm gonna point something else out.
Okay, okay.
Pull up that same one real quick.
Okay.
And here lies like my biggest problem when these guys complain about whatever's going on. Look how many road games the SEC played. Texas played 16 games on the season, 4 road games. Georgia, 4 away games. Tennessee, 5. They only play a couple of games away from home, 8 games, 6 games, 6 games, 7 games, 7 games, 7 games. They play most of their games at home. They play a cupcake schedule in the beginning. Any neutral site games normally lead towards their region of the country. So if USC want to play any one of these SEC schools on neutral field, it's probably in New Orleans or Atlanta.
To be fair, they did get LSU to come to Vegas this year.
Vegas. Okay, I give you that one. All right.
Just to be fair, but you're right. But just to be
fair.
But
once again, they didn't go to Cal. They didn't play at the ramp. They didn't play at SoFi.
Yeah.
Whereas Georgia, you want to play Georgia on a neutral site? Yeah, we'll play you in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Like, so they have the crop of talent from Florida to Texas high school-wise. Florida up to South Carolina, west over to Texas. Some of the best college football, high school football programs are in that region.
Right.
Yes, there's great ones in Pittsburgh. There's great ones in Ohio. There's great ones in Michigan.
But not enough.
Saying that, but not as many as compared to the amount you get to recruit from that region. So you're getting the best players. You're getting the benefit of the doubt. You have so many NFL players that are alums of many of these schools because they are talented. You don't need to then continue to stack the deck in your favor. You got 3 teams in last playoffs out of the 12. The Big Ten got 4, even though people were trying to get Indiana kicked out when they were still undefeated before they lost their game. They still had people trying to get them kicked out. It's just this arrogance that you really think your teams after 4, 1, 2, and 3 in the SEC can probably be, you know, competitive with like 1 or 2 for most every other conference. But 4 through the rest, they are just susceptible to losing as any other conference's teams after the top, you know, after the top 25% of your conference. So right. You have 8 to 10 teams. The first 2, yes, they are outstanding. SEC, your first 3 are outstanding. The rest of them are average as it plays out when South Carolina loses their bowl game to Illinois, when Bama loses 2 games on the road to Oklahoma and Vanderbilt, then they lose their bowl game to Michigan with basically a third string crop of players. It happens. You are a good conference. You have good teams, but all of you aren't as good as your top team.
And also,
like, I liken the dudes like from tough neighborhoods. Like, listen, I get it. Some people in your neighborhood really throw hands. Some people in your neighborhood are really tough. Just because you grew up in the same zip code or the same street doesn't by proxy give you that same kind of force and leverage. You got to go out here and show it. And every year the SEC, I know people jump all over like it's crazy. Like, yeah, they don't win all of their bowl games by a lot of points when they play other conferences every year. It's a toss-up every year in December and January when they're playing these bowl games outside of their regions.
And then you got, you know, so moving it over to the Big Ten. And a part of this playoff agreement does bring, I guess, a SEC Big Ten scheduling alliance. So that's the first step, in my opinion, to the whole AFC, NFC thing that we've been talking about with the SEC and Big Ten, kind of just breaking away from everybody else. So when you look at the Big Ten standings, oh, I hate this so much. When you look at the Big Ten standings, you know, from this year, you got some funky stuff going on because, you know, Ohio State lost 2 games. So they would be the last team to get in with that auto bid. You know, if they had the 4 auto bids, they did get 4 teams in this year, which is the top 4 that we're looking at right now. You know what I'm saying? But on top of that, let's just say, like, let's roll with it. You know, you give, because it was Penn State and Oregon in the Big Ten title game. So we'll give them the 2 slots. So now you could have Indiana against Iowa, and you could have Ohio State, Illinois in your mini little playoff there. You know, but Illinois is the team that I wanted to highlight because they did beat South Carolina in the bowl game. Two of their three losses were to Oregon and Penn State, who both made the playoffs, versus South Carolina and Ole Miss and Bama, who didn't lose to anybody that made the playoffs. And that's what that's the bad part about college football is that you're talking about whose loss was worse. You're not talking about who had the best win. You're talking about who had the worst loss. And that's where it gets creepy and stupid. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, it's just one of those things that, you know,
Mississippi State actually, like, yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. It's like all y'all aren't that good.
You know what I mean? But that's where you get into this. So when you really boil down to it, you know, and let's say Ohio State had three conference losses in this scenario. Are we really trying to get Illinois and Iowa into the playoff talk? Because the Big Ten has four slots. You know what I mean? And that's where you get into this.
And because if they guarantee four slots, you're going to have to put somebody in.
You got to put them in.
So you're going to be in a situation where
8-4
Miami. 10-2 Miami won't get in because 8-5 Iowa is the fourth team out of the Big Ten that gets in. Like, I mean, it's asinine.
It's stupid. And I mean, so the one thing that I do like about it, because, you know, I try to find the silver linings, but I guess to some degree you minimize the committee, you know, from having so much, you know, because when you look at the committee, for example, I know, you know, Residente knows, everybody knows they wanted to get Alabama in that playoff if they could.
Absolutely.
But by having these ranking releasings every week, you got Indiana up here at 6 or 7. You got Bama down here at 13. That much doesn't necessarily change for you to justify pushing Bama back up the ranking to get ahead of Indiana or whoever that you want to put them ahead of. So now it gets a little shady because even though the committee might be gone, these auto bids are still going to leave out teams that deserve to be in. And then what do you do with Notre Dame? And then what do you do with Notre Dame? Is a 10-2 Notre Dame automatically in?
I don't understand the need for so many changes to a playoff system. I think worked. If you look at it, because in previous years, Ohio State wouldn't have made the BCS top two back in the day when that was the longstanding determination of who played the national championship game. They wouldn't have made it in the AP coaches poll voting before that. They wouldn't have made it in the four-team playoff. So you had your champion, the Ohio State Buckeyes, as an 8 seed in the 12-team playoff, show this is what happens. You can have an up and down regular season.
More money.
You get used to it. They still had the four teams. And I think they would be able to keep getting four teams because I think SMU's year is an anomaly. I don't think they're going to have another year like that because they're a smaller school. They're probably going to get poached for talent, either from a brain standpoint, where they get like coaches that want to get new jobs at Texas or new jobs at, you know, other schools, Texas A&M, or you're going to get talent that transfers out. So players are going to go from SMU to another school. So I don't think a lot of these schools are going to have this repeat success. I don't know if Indiana's going to have another 11-1 season under their belt. You know, so it's like
Bama took my guy from Colorado.
I think the players and coaches with the 12-team playoff is like, let that play out. Like, it will be fine. Let it play out to where give it a few years. Like, you're already, they're demanding stuff as if they got left out. You got four teams in.
Well,
didn't even want in, and they still got them in.
But that's so the problem, right?
On your side.
But that's the problem, right? Because it's all timing. So this year, this upcoming season, is the last year of the playoff contract. So it just happens.
Who signs a 2-year contract new playoff format?
I'm just saying, like, people that know that they can change the rules. And that's the thing, right? Because the ACC and Big 12 aren't going to say, hey, you know what, SEC and Big Ten? whatever, we don't need y'all. They ain't going to say that because they do need them. You know what I mean? They're not going to survive on their own if this, like, if the SEC and Big Ten were to break away. I don't know how popular ACC and Big 12 football is going to be for a second tier championship. So, you know, so they can't say that. They can't stand up to them. But there has to be a way, and that's where college football, or I guess college sports in general, the NCAA, as they say, is toothless. So there's no commissioner or someone to step in and raise the bullshit flag.
This is what, and I think we just talked about the NBA. Having the commissioner being like the middleman between the owners and the players, very similar to the NFL, there's some structure there. So if there is a dispute, one side can't just go make up a whole new thing using the players. It's like in my personal opinion, just me, Mr. Logical, I don't know why they feel the need to try to force this leverage that they already have. It's like you're gonna cheapen your regular season. I don't think the ratings, I mean, granted, most people are watching games on streaming services now, and I think people are just kind of ingratiated to being a fan and fandom of college football teams. I don't think that's going to change anything.
That's the problem. Nobody's going to stop watching.
No one's going to stop watching.
The same way that people buy Madden every year.
But you're definitely going to soil your product. And it's going to be a situation where, do you really want all of the top talent in the country to just come to the Big Ten and SEC? Or do you really want parity?
Well, another good thing, the last good thing, I guess, is that maybe you do have teams, not necessarily the same teams like SMU, but you have other teams of that ilk. Maybe their fans are a little more bought in if they're having a great season, like a Louisville or somebody like that, or, you know, a Missouri even. You know,
but that's
what I mean?
The thing. Louisville, Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia Tech, UVA, you have your opportunity by just being in the proximity of the high school talent that you should be able to recruit. You should be able to restock and retool your team every year because you are in football country. If you are a coach in Nebraska or Iowa or Minnesota and you can't field a good offensive line, you're not doing your job right. So if you can't get skilled position players that are dynamic enough, like guys like Jeremiah Smith and the wide receiver core that Ohio State seems to reload every single year, if you can't do that, then that's on your recruiting base. You don't get to just be like, oh, well, we're going to get a spot anyway. No, Boise State had a Heisman Trophy candidate, a player of the year candidate on their team, and they beat the teams on their schedule, and they lost one close game to Oregon, which could have gone the other way. You know, if you get a drop.
Yeah, here, Oregon had a kickoff return and a punt return in that game.
Yeah, so it's like they're setting it up because they don't want those teams to get in. And it's like, your top teams are still some of the most recognizable brands in the country as far as college football. So Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. Michigan had a down year, and you still got four Big Ten schools in.
And you still beat – and Michigan in a down year still beat Ohio State and Bama. You know,
and then Ohio State won that. I think they should be looking at this year like, this is success. This shows our dominance. You don't need to now – tip the scales in your favor even more. Right. And that's the part that's kind of baffling, right? Because you're going to get the money. The money is coming because you're Ohio State, because you're Michigan, because you're Indiana, because you're Penn State, because you're Alabama, because you're Drew. You're going to get more money than Louisville. You're going to get more money than Baylor. You're going to get more money than SC, right, and all these other prominent schools. You're going to get more money in Utah and Colorado, no matter how much these guys are on TV. How much more do you need?
I don't know, but I reckon we're about to find out, sir. So I have a question. You know, we were talking about this, or we didn't have a conversation, but I asked you about it, and I still don't know if I have an answer. So I was trying to figure out, should the NFL adjust their draft eligibility rules? Because as it is right now, You know, you have to be removed 3 years from high school. So that can include a redshirt year, of course, you know, and 2 years or whatever you want to call it. But 3 years from the date that you graduate or year that you graduated high school, you can be eligible for the NFL draft. Do you think that's antiquated or do you think that's still relevant?
I think it's still relevant because the NFL, like they say, it's a grown man's game. So 18, 19-year-old guys graduating high school, because high school sports now, it's a lot of reclassing and then the upclassing and all these other classings and misclassification, this reclassification. So you got guys who are 19 years old going into their senior year of high school because they've moved back a couple of years. They moved back when they were 15. Or these guys are like reclassing to move up after they went back for a year and they went to summer school and had some extra credits. But it was like Ryan, the guy, Ryan Smith, right? The wide receiver.
Jeremiah Smith or from Ohio State?
Ryan Williams.
Oh, Ryan Williams. Okay, from Bama.
Yeah. 17, but when he had reclass, went back and then discovered, you know what, I got enough credits, Alabama wants me, changed it, graduated, and then enrolled in Bama for the spring. And I think a lot of guys are doing that. But I need your body to be at least 20 or 21 years old. It looks like these guys are ready for the NFL, but they're still out here torching 19-year-old cornerbacks. They're still out here running through 20-year-old linebacker arm tackles. They're not running into OGs like Bobby Wagner on these slant routes. Like, they're not running into Chris Jones when they get in these draw plays at the middle, or like they roll out and they get, you know, they're not trying to tackle guys like Kelce and Saquon Barkley in the open field. Your body needs to be ready for that. And I think the transfer portal is already crazy. I don't mind the transfer portal, but I think the one and done, I think it's a bad idea. And I also think it puts people in a situation where everyone's chasing success. And I think that one and done is going to get way more bad voices in the ears of these young players. And they're going to make poor decisions because the NFL players, I'm like, NFL teams, like, listen, I don't care what the rule is. I'm not drafting a 19-year-old in my first round pick. And then people can talk about Jeremiah Smith. Oh, he'd be the best. Okay, cool. You bank on that. You bank on an NFL GM putting his number one pick into a teenager.
So do you think that there is room for a league that is almost like a bridge between college and the NFL?
College football. It's college football.
Hold on. But
need extra stuff.
But do you think that a league like, say, hypothetically, and of course this would never happen, but just having a conversation, a league like the UFL could be almost like a G League of sorts, but by design?
No. Reason it is, I don't think it is because you already have your established pipeline. Your pipeline is high school, JUCO, Division II, III, Division I, college football. Get body ready, go to pros, UFL, XFL, USFXL, LMNOPXL, all these other leagues are leagues of guys who came to the top of the mountain and there was no spot for them. So now you want to maintain being a professional. Now you go to one of these other professional leagues. But as your amateurism goes up, granted, I know like the money and everything else, but it's like high school, college, NFL. And then you stay ready. Guys go to Canada and they play in the leagues. Guys played in the UFL. And they get another opportunity. But we already have the buffet line. We already have the process. You walk in, you say how many people you want, you pay for it, you go there, you get your plates, you walk around, you get your food, you sit at the table. You don't need another person to break down all the different food at the buffet here. It's like, listen, you know what a buffet is, you know what the line is, this is the process. Go, sit down, eat your food, deal with it. Everything because one person comes out. I see if it was like 100 players every year, like in the NBA. That one and done rule is stupid because the NBA is drafting guys at like 16 and letting them sit in Europe for 2 years and they can come over and play.
Right.
Basketball is less physical. And they never do. And basketball is less physical. Yes, you need to be tough, but you don't need to be super strong to defend Kevin Durant.
I think that I like – I think
you don't
that
need
I
to like, be physically gifted to like as far as like strength and right, your body. Right. I think at 18 or 19 years old, you could probably play good
you
defense
can use your speed
on Bradley Beal.
Yeah, your head knocked off.
You can guard Jalen Green. Yeah, he might bust your ass because he has experience, but you're not going to be at such a physical deficit as soon as you show up on an NBA court, like a tennis player or a professional golfer.
I think I like the baseball rule as far as, you know, you got guys like Russell Wilson, you know, who got drafted when he was at NC State. And well, the team had his rights. They had his rights, yeah. You know? So I think I might like an idea like that, where if an NFL team hypothetically looks out at a Quinn Ewers or, you know, CJ Stroud.
Where would you put them?
That's practice. I mean, not they wouldn't play on the practice squad, but you just have their rights, you know. And then when they become draft eligible, they're your asset that you can trade.
I like that. Or yes, something. And I like thing outside the box. I don't like it because I don't want to give the NFL. I don't want to give the professional leagues more power over the individual player.
Mm-hmm.
What if okay. I? What if, you know, like, because you think about it, Carson Beck was going to the NFL draft after his injury, surgery. He was going to go to the draft. Then his girlfriend was like, hey, man, come down to Miami. I think they got a bag for you. He was like, all right, cool. I'm going to come down to Miami and rehab and get this $8 million. So now say the New York Giants had his draft rights and they were like, you know what? We need you to come to the league right now. But they're only going to pay you $400,000 to sit on the bench. And he's like, I could be making $7.5 million more and getting better at my game. But yet, because you want to control, like I said, the NFL, you have enough players, like you have enough people to choose from. Like you have the whole HBCUs full of skilled players. I know a lot of offensive linemen don't tend to come out of, you know, a lot of HBCUs, mm-hmm. but so many skilled players you can get from the HBCUs, they don't draft any of those guys.
Right.
So I don't want them to be controlling other guys' futures. But like I said, the one and done, to me, I think you need to be physically ready. And 3 years removed, I'm guessing there's some scientific stuff to that.
I don't know if there's enough. What's that old saying? I don't know if there's enough juice worth the squeeze or whatever that is. Because you know, you probably had people
you're getting one or two guys a year, maybe that could play 1 year of college football and be like, yeah, maybe this guy could be.
Yeah, you had freaks like Adrian Peterson, for example, or you know, I know Maurice Claret tried it. You know, he tried to sue to try to get into it and lost.
Yeah,
you know, so I get it from the physical aspect, but I also think that. You know, like this is probably a better conversation to have before NIL existed because,
I was just thinking that same thing when you said Maurice Claret, I was thinking that same thing and I was just gonna wait,
because since you know they have NIL, you know, you're getting, I guess, if you want to say a more qualified player when that time comes because a lot of these guys are staying in college an extra year or two just to get that NIL, you know, so you might get Carson Beck. He could have came out this year coming off that injury, but he's still probably behind because who knows where his health is right now.
He might get better reading through progressions. He might get a little stronger.
Right.
He might, might say, you know what? I need a few weeks Miami to before I start.
Now you get to watch him over the course of this season. And instead of spending a second round pick on him, you might go, oh, he's only worth a fourth round pick because that injury didn't heal the way that it was supposed to.
Heal. He can't make those throws that he was making prior to injury.
Something along those lines. So that's where it's advantageous to
let somebody else do your scouting for you. Let someone else do your recruiting, your healing, your rehab, and your teaching. Let somebody else handle all of that for you because you got this 53-man roster to figure out, and then you have your 20 practice squad guys, and everybody else is like, cool. We'll keep our eye out on this guy. you know, because he went back to school. Or maybe you send a flyer. You just kind of give some information. Hey, you know what? Come to one of our practices or something.
So since we're here, how do you feel as far as there's been talk that the NBA may bring back their rule, you know, to allow or the one and done to make you go, or I'm sorry, to get rid of the one and done and let high school players come back in like they were before. I know we talked about the physical differences, but do you think that's beneficial for the NBA?
I think what happens, and we talked about this before, you see a lot of these young guys and we see their tape and we see like the hype that their high school tape gets and all the summertime and overtime elites, and we're following them. And then that one year, they all make a decision on what we're going to do for the next 12 months before the NBA draft. All right, I'm going to Australia. I'm going to Italy. I'm going to Overtime Elite. Or I'm going to Duke. I'm going to UNC. I'm going to Arkansas, wherever you're going. And then they get that year, and they're in somebody else's system that wasn't the system that we saw their highlights from. Granted, could have been high school level. And now it looks like, ooh, is he really worth that first-round pick? Mm-hmm. And then because he's not a first-round pick or lottery pick, he stays overseas or he goes to another school. And then in that meantime, another guy comes to a spot. I say if the guy's hot and it looks like he's going to be a top pick, let the NBA get their hands on him, work him out, see if he's willing to be a top pick. And if they say, hey, you get enough NBA teams to say, you know what? We stamped this guy. He will go in the top 10. And then that person gets entered in the draft. That way you can keep your one and done, but you can just make an exception. Like, hey, if you get enough GMs to say, or whoever.
Yeah, I mean, they're scouting teams anyway.
Identify whoever's scouting and say, hey, we think this guy's ready. You know, we'll say, give him a first round grade. If you think a guy's going to get a first round grade, so that's 30 picks in the NBA, you know, sometimes they lose picks, whatever, but 30 picks. If you think this guy's going to get a first round grade after high school, let him join the NBA draft. Okay. Just find a good system that you can use, a good metrics you can use, or just rely on the expertise of the guys that, you know, are important to your league between scouts, GMs, coaches. If in every team, you know, every team gets to say like 50 guys say they think they're ready. And the coaches go through their tape and say, all right, cool, we'll have a combine, like just for those guys.
Right.
And then they grade them and say, hey, we are giving first round grades to these 8 guys. You other 42, you're going to have to go to college or something like that. You know, you have to figure out some other kind of way to do it. But like if guys are really ready, then figure out the way to get them there.
All right. Last question before we get out of here. And this is just on the fly as you were talking. I thought about this just because I was wondering, since we're talking about the one and done and all that kind of stuff like that, has anybody in your circles or at work been talking about college basketball at all?
No, like it's
I mean,
it's
March rare. Is a couple of weeks away, you know.
But the damn tournament don't start till like March 24th, it seems like.
It's like, yeah,
you got
it's
March like, Madness is basically,
I think it's the 13th or something like that. But because I fly out on Saturday from a cruise, which is the 15th. So yeah, it's like the 13th.
Yeah.
But I was just asking because, you know, with the tournament coming up, this is usually the time where people should probably be looking a little bit if they're going to be filling out brackets and all that kind of thing, conference tournaments.
And you and I definitely, as we're going to start covering it.
Oh, yeah, I'm already ready. You know what I'm saying? Like, Auburn is, like, having one of the greatest seasons in NCAA history right now. You know what I'm saying? That's why I was wondering because, you know, but they don't necessarily have, I guess, big NBA names. So that's probably why it's not resonating. But, you know, you got Cooper Flagg at Duke and everything, and – you know, you got the two guys at Rutgers. Rutgers just isn't any good.
Yeah. So,
you know,
that's another thing that can kind of hurt your draft stock is like you're supposed to be an NBA player, but you go to a college team and you can't get No, you can't lead them to 26 wins. You know, like, that's, I think that's, that also hurts the one and done
right
part. But I've never liked the one and done rules. Going on, Mike, the one and done rule to me always felt like the NBA was just trying to help college basketball backfill their talent.
Right. And it didn't work anyway.
And you see, like I said, the NBA, and I know Dennis Schroeder said this. Yep, I know people, anytime you invoke this word slavery, modern day slavery, minus people say, oh, well, you get paid. Yeah. And I get it. Like, the choice of words is poor. Like, stop comparing stuff to slavery. You can look at it as a control aspect and, you know, the way owners use their leverage. And I think the one and done rule was one of those things where it's like, mm-hmm, every other sport that isn't pretty much your, any sport that isn't like kind of, if the face of your sport is young black men, it seems to be regulated way earlier in your life than other sports. Mm-hmm. Tennis, if you're good enough, you can go pro. Skiing, you can go pro. Swimming, golf, you can go pro. Golf, you can go pro. Hockey, you can fight. Baseball, you can fight. NBA, you got to go to college 1 year, and if you step out of line, we're going to suspend you. But yet, we've been seeing highlights of USA versus Canada fighting in the first 9 seconds. Like, it's the most proudest moment in American history.
Hey, they booed our anthem. You know
what I'm saying? But I'm saying, like, the fighting part.
No, I know.
We love the fighting in hockey, and we love the fact that, you know, these guys are young, coming out of high school, getting drafted in the MLB. They end up some kind of program, but it seems like it's a lot of focus on control of the sports that are headed up by young black men. And I think the NBA is starting to learn that. And I think college football is trying to exploit that by just being greedy, mm-hmm, and trying to take all the money that they can so they can buy up all these players and continue to just stockpile all of this money that they can hide, but because they're mostly nonprofit organizations that don't have to pay taxes.
And one thing I want people to keep their eye on, you know, for one, keep your eye on the One Mike podcast, you know, Mondays and Thursdays at noon Eastern. You know, make sure y'all checking that out, getting your black on black news and all that. But keep your eye on the SEC in basketball this year, because they may break the record of a conference getting teams into the NCAA tournament. So the current record is 11, held by the Big East. The SEC just might get 12. You know, you got that going on. Like I mentioned Auburn already. They already have 14 quad one wins. The next closest team has 8. You know, you got Duke and Cooper Flag. You know, keep your eye in Conknuckle. You know, one of the coolest names ever. You know, like, I hate the Blue Devils, but you got to give credit, you know, where it's due. You know, you got North Carolina, you know, sitting out here at about 15 and 11. So, you know, are they going to get in the NCAA tournament? I mean, you should say no, but they are North Carolina. So
they are North Carolina.
They win 2 games in the ACC tournament. And 18 they might
and
get
11
in.
They're in, yeah.
Yeah, they might get in. You know, saying you got the conference tournaments, like I said, starting in about a week and a half or so. You know, so I'm here for all of that. You know what I mean? Like, I think that this year we got a bunch of mid-majors. Like, there's the Big West out there, and I'm sorry, I'm nerding out right now. You got the Big West out there with 2 teams that might get in. They got 2 teams that might get in. So, you know, Gonzaga, are they going to get in? Never thought you would ask that question. So there's a lot going on in college basketball, but I think that it's fallen so far off the radar, you know, that people just aren't tracking it. And if people aren't watching the NBA, you know, at the same clip that they were, I can't imagine that they're going to watch college basketball, because those are players that they know less. So,
yeah, the NBA has problems. I said it's going to be a table meeting where, like I say, you leave the egos at the door and you come and say, why is our product in trouble? Or why is it perceived to be in trouble? Because I bet the numbers and the money
because the commissioner needs new advisors.
The money probably doesn't say, hey, we're in trouble, but the viewership and just the conversations around basketball, right, that you and I have, like, we have a sports podcast and our conversations around basketball are very, they're very negative. Bleak.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's bleak. And it's like, it should be highlighted more, but we're looking like, yo, you have a good product, but you're highlighting the poorest aspects of your product.
So like the one good thing that the NBA did, you know, and this goes back to David Stern, is all the international outreach, you know, like that's paying off. And that's some of the money that comes in that keeps the league in a good position as far as financially. But, you know, you also have these new initiatives like NBA Africa, you know, things like that. You know, we had Gabe Vincent come in from Team Nigeria, and now he's in the league playing for the Lakers of all teams. You got, I can't even pronounce his name, but the guy off of the 76ers, you know, that was on, you know, in the Olympics as well this year.
Yeah.
You know, who?
Oh, the French guy.
Yeah, the French guy. Gershon Bousselle. Yeah.
Yeah.
They got him. That's a great story in the Sixers.
Yeah, because I think he had some NBA run before with a couple of teams, uh-huh, and then went back to Europe and, you know, came back. I think Mike's saying they got to play better. I don't think the players are playing poorly.
Well, it's just the game itself, though. It's not the
game. Some of the games are unwatchable. Some of the teams are so bad, mm-hmm, so quick into the season, that it just Cleveland versus Charlotte should be entertaining, but by December it might not be. You know, right. Detroit's making a turnaround, but you just have, I think it's all kind of running together. I think everybody's trying to take so much of this money that's coming in, mm-hmm, and ignoring, like, listen, if you just get the hell out of the way and let the players play,
mm-hmm,
the college players will continue to join the NBA. Let these guys who are ready out of high school play in the league. Let these guys, the way you use Jordan's buzz with the 92 Dream Team and use basketball around the world, continue to do that with your current players. I think the NBA has gotten so global now. The people who wear suits are acting as if they are the reason that the league is so global. And the players got to do their part too. Like, listen, you guys got to play better basketball, stay healthy, play your back-to-backs, whatever the case may be. But it's just a collective. But in my opinion, like I said, I'm very pro worker in a lot of my conversations. I think too much leadership gets in the way. Like I tell the guys at work, when they come up with this new idea to keep everybody in the loop, I'm like, no. Like, why? I'm like,
You know what the NBA needs? And I'll wrap up on this. You know what the NBA needs?
Some retired veterans to come work in
the NBA needs something they can't have. They need Michael Jordan or something of that ilk to walk through the door. 28 points, 7 boards, 6 assists as a rookie to just come into the league and light it, you know, because we've been talking about it, right? Like, you got your LeBrons and Currys and Durants. People are going to be fading out, you know what I'm saying? Jason Tatum's, your Anthony Edwards, people like that, they've been in the league long enough to establish that this is the guy that is going to take the torch next. You know what I mean? And, you know,
Edwards' team messed it up by trading away a valuable piece of his team.
Who's about to be an MVP candidate. And then you got, you know, you got your SGAs, you know, who should, for the second straight year, should win MVP, but he didn't win it last year. So, you know, I don't know. But like, I don't know how that resonates, because I know we talk about this with other players like Luka and Jokic, because their English isn't the best. Giannis's English, you know, is kind of timid. But SGA speaks fine enough English, but he's not American. So I just don't know how that resonates.
And that's the thing. I don't think people need a face of the league. I don't think we need a Jordan to walk through. I think we need to recognize that all of you aren't Mark Cuban. Right. All of you aren't this charismatic guy, and you're the reason why the team is successful. You have to recognize that this dude that has the shoe deal is the reason you get. Yeah, You earned your money somewhere and you bought this team. The reason this team's going to grow money is the guy who's playing basketball, the guy on the team. Like, I don't know what the beef was with Luka and Dallas and the new ownership, and I'm like, you, unless that rumor is true that they're really trying to move that team to Vegas so she can put a casino on the side of the stadium, hey, more power to you.
Or Luka better be with the Latvian or no, Serbian or hold on, Latvian mafia or something.
Yeah, he must be with some kind of underground.
The Latvian Yakuza, you know what I'm
saying? Yeah, so him and Porzingis made up and like they're going to bring back, you know, they're going to reunite Yugoslavia or something. I don't know. But you know whatever they were doing in the NBA, need to let the egos get out of the way and let the game speak for itself. Because the game is dope. The players are dope. When Embiid plays, he's really good. He was on one leg. He dropped 50 in the playoffs on one leg. Like, he had the biggest brace on. He had an offensive lineman type brace on in a basketball game.
And his ass needs to sit out the rest of this season so he could be that next season. And that's why I asked the question. I don't ever want to bang on nobody for doing what they feel like they need to do. But I was like, why is this man playing in the Olympics?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Especially coming off of that injury. Yeah, like, but coming off of that, you know what I mean? And then, like,
why? My thing was, like, why are you playing for United States when the Olympics are in France?
Well, I saw that Kyrie is
trying to go to Australia.
The Australian, he's trying to play for Australia. And I'm with that, you know what I mean? Like, I want competitive Olympics. That's part of the reason why I don't watch the Olympics is because it's not competitive. So,
it was good,
you know,
it was good last summer was really good.
Yeah,
I
caught a couple games.
I watched a lot of the games. They're really
good. I'm just not invested enough to care enough to wake up at 3 a.m. to watch these games. You know what I mean? But look, at the end of the day, the NBA needs help. You know, like the only reason I brought up what I brought up as far as like they need a Jordan to come in is just because that's the way that the NBA has always marketed themselves. It's always been the individual.
Yeah, but the reason they can't promote any young player is because they haven't promoted a single player in the last like 5-10 years. They have been shitting on every single player, every opportunity they get. The media doesn't highlight anyone, hence why SGA wasn't MVP, because the media only talks about the guys that people don't like. They don't like, or the league doesn't like, or
they in the player, championship
picture. Not a championship team, so it's like they only focus on the most polarizing personalities. The guy wearing 23 in LA is number one. Then you have the guy 30 wearing 30, and then you got the guy wearing 21 in Philly. So you have these guys, but the guys that they do segments about aren't guys that they're trying to highlight. Anthony Edwards. LeBron is like the light. Like, there's nothing he can do. He can't hide. He plays in LA. He's the oldest dude in the league. He's still really good. But you have SGA who's playing better than LeBron, which is not like a knock on LeBron. He's 40. You have LaMelo Ball who's playing on a terrible team, but at least he's entertaining. He's flashy. We've known about him for years, ever since his dad and his brother came out and everything else. So it's like you have these players you can highlight, but they just shit on every single player, every opportunity they get.
You know, speaking of which, to Mike's point, I heard somebody earlier. I don't know who it was. It was either Stephen A. or it might have been Kendrick Perkins. And he was like, not only did he not play, but then he going to get up there and take the pictures with his street clothes on. Like, he didn't even put his uniform on to take the picture. And I was just like, bruh. But, you know, but that's what it is, though. It's all about highlighting. And that's why, to bring it full circle, that's why I liked seeing the Rising Stars. You know, that, you know, because now, theoretically, even if you feel like those players shouldn't be there, somebody on that team is probably in your conscious now that, or your subconscious that wasn't before.
Remember the NFL, I think they still do it every year. They do that Hey Rookie.
Yeah.
For the draft.
Yeah.
They need to do that for these young players and put it on whatever platform. Like, I'm watching, I had to get an infusion last week, so I was watching Starting Five on Netflix. I've seen it. scrolled past it a few times. I never really paid attention to it, but I watched it. It's a great documentary. It's behind the scenes. It's candid. It's honest. It's the same way, the same vein that they did quarterback and receiver, where they had, you got the old star, you got the young guy, you got the guys, you know, I think it was last season. So it was like the Celtics run to the championship. So it's just, there's ways of highlighting these guys, and you can put them on different platforms and you put them in different things. But if it's simply just you hope people watch TNT or NBA TV or ESPN, then that's not enough. You got to do more than that. Like, I know that these guys are looking at their bank accounts and they're seeing all the money coming in. They think they're fulfilling it, but it's like, you're not.
You know something else the NBA needs? I promise this is the last thing. The NBA needs the Knicks to get to the finals at some point.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you can't get a Boston-LA series, you know what I'm saying? You got to get the Knicks in there.
You got to get a Knicks-Boston's Eastern Conference Finals and a Warriors-Lakers or OKC Western Conference Final.
Hypothetically, and I know this ain't going to happen, and, you know, so I know what you're about to say, Mike, but I'm about to ask the question anyway. Do you think it would actually ring bells if the Clippers made the finals? Just off of being in LA and having the market, or do you think that they're so number two to the Lakers that it wouldn't really move a needle?
That's tough, because I always argue the whole market thing.
That would be great, Knicks versus Hawks in the first round, and we might get it.
I don't know if Kawhi's not a big enough star. The city is a city. Kawhi's not.
Harden. I mean, he's older now, but you know what I mean? He still has name value.
Maybe, but I don't know if
he's an all-star.
I don't think people show up to see Harden now. I don't think people are going to games. Like, I got to see Harden, like, if he comes and plays in Philly, if the game's, like, in a week. So I'm like, yo, I got to see Harden play against the Sixers.
It gives them a chance to promote the dome, right, in the wall.
But the thing about that, they just do that with just concerts. They just have, like, a comedian do, you know, 10 shows there, and they'll talk about it, or they'll have a country music artist perform or something. So they're going to sell the hell out of that stadium. But, like, I think the personalities and the faces that go on the marquee, it's going to be tough for LA. But they can fucking sell Cleveland versus OKC or Boston versus OKC.
That would probably be the least watched series in the finals history.
Start talking about it now. Just start talking about, oh, we got the second youngest team in the NBA, and then we got this team that's, you know, they came in with the new coach. Like, they have to start having conversations about these other teams, because if you think about it, people probably, if you're not really into an NBA, you probably thought that the Cleveland team disbanded when LeBron went to Los Angeles, because they haven't talked about them ever since. They only show highlights. They show highlights from 2018. They haven't shown. Go to Facebook and put in 2019 Cleveland Cavaliers highlights. You won't find any.
You're going to find Toronto highlights, huh?
you'll find Toronto maybe, but like, so this is an opportunity for the media to stop shitting on the players. Like, yeah, we get it. Some of them might be divas. They want to play back-to-backs. They don't want to go out there and play with broken bones in their fingers. We get it. It's not 1986, but still, get back to the game. Get these sensitive-ass refs off the court, or get them graded. Get something, because
they do need us. They do. They need us. Hot box, one mic. Sports Reports is ordered.
Listen, I'm putting them applications for new NBA offices.
I need to stop playing and write this letter to Liquid Death, though. You know what I'm saying? But but yo, one last thing. I promise, last thing for real. Shout out to Brandon Ingram, you know, Duke's own, tricking a team to giving him $40 million a year.
Yo, I'm telling you, he was like, yo, I never would have thought this was true. Like, the team's 16-40. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but yo, he is the world renowned Mr. Logical, and all he asks of you is that you don't bring feelings to a fact fight.
Don't do it.
You know what I'm saying? All I ask is that you like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things. And while you're doing the free things, take a second out to do the good things too. You know what I'm saying? We are Sports Reports Daughter. We will be back on Friday. Let's see what happens over the next few days. The NBA will be back on Wednesday.
Luka and Dallas.
Don't do it. You know what I'm saying? That's what's up. Holler back, y'all. We love you. Peace.